Sheila Prop, I did engage us together very consciously and deliberately. And he probably saw both, that we were, surrendered to him, but that we had qualities that were complementary to each other's, and that so working together we balanced each other. And there were many occasions when Srila Prabhupada wanted us both to deal with something together. And then he felt confident. Like in his, like quite towards the end, Srila Prabhupada executed a power of attorney. Do you know what a power of attorney is? Who can you're a language?
It's when you sign over legal rights that someone else can sign for you, that they can act and sign in your behalf legally.
So he executed a power of attorney in favor of Tamal Krishna Goswami and me. One evening there was something to be signed, might have been that, and Tamal Krishna Goswami was always back in Juhu with Srila Prabhupada at that stage, and Prabhupada's health was very weak. And I was in the city, and I came back, and I walked into the scene. Srila Prabhupada was on his bed, and Tamal Krishna Goswami was sitting by his bed, and there was a lawyer, Mr. Asnani, also sitting by his bed. And it's sort of like Prabhupada. Tamal Krishna Goswami is saying, like, you know, we don't know when Giriraj is going to be back. You know, we should just sign it. And Prabhupada was saying, no, I want to wait for him to come. Then I came in. And then the next morning, it was the same, a similar thing. Srila Prabhupada wanted, I think he had to sign something, but he wanted both of us to approve of it before he signed something like that. So he brought us together like that as a team. But one thing is that, that Tamal Krishna Goswami, well, he did have a heavy nature, and sometimes he would be very strongly opinionated. And this was after Prabhupada left, just after he left in the first year. And so we were working together, and sometimes he would have an opinion, and I just felt it wasn't right, it wasn't whatever, practical, it wasn't proper. But in his mood, you know, he really wouldn't listen. But I wouldn't worry, because it happened almost every time without fail, that the next morning, when he got up and chanted his rounds, he would see, I don't know if he would see what I was saying, or he on his own saw something that I was also seeing on my own. And then he would say, you know, I was chanting, I was thinking about it, I think we should, which was what I had seen and suggested. So I think the point of sadhana, like strong spiritual practices, is very important, along with everything, the devotion being sold out, but that's also part of the devotion, you know, to because that was part of Prabhupada's instruction. But he did take his spiritual practices very seriously, and later on, you know, decades after Srila Prabhupada left, he really was spending time in Vrindavan, you know, going, making a deep study of Shastra, and very, you know, attentive to his japa, and going on Parikrama, visiting different holy places. And during that period, you could say, that's like one of the memories that devotees cherish and have very vivid recollections of. And that would be, we would teach at the VIHE, the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education. It was a very wonderful initiative begun by Burijan Prabhu. And I remember one at the end of the course, you know, there was a meeting and different people sharing realizations, and Tamal Krishna Goswami really appreciated Burijan Prabhu, that he was like at the cutting edge, and he really saw what the society needed. Because up until then, there was no systematic program of adult education in ISKCON. And he saw that need, and he created the VIHE to fulfill that. So, but yeah, it was really a great time. So we would teach, we would each teach courses at VIHE. That would be Monday through Friday. And then Saturday would be Parikrama, going to different holy places. And so Tamal Krishna Goswami and I would go out with our disciples. I mean, the VIHE had its own, but we had our own, because we wanted to be together. And those were very memorable. I mean, devotees from that period have the fondest memories of us going out together on Parikrama. Yeah. So that was a very... And he has his house. Tamal Krishna Goswami, he acquired a really nice house in Vrindavan. And, of course, he was a very good host. He was very good at training devotees to cook prasad and serve prasad. So at his house, I mean, it would be everywhere in Mayapur, but he spent more time in Vrindavan. And yeah, he would invite people for lunch. We'd sit on the floor with the chonkis, these little tables. And he was like so precise in the way he trained the cooks. He had one cook, he was actually a very good cook, named Gopal Raj. And he would have Gopal Raj, I don't know exactly how it worked, but he would have him bring the dokkha just like a few seconds before it was like fully cooked. And as he was bringing it in to place on the plate, it would... that little bit of remaining cooking would take place, and it would just be perfect. Yeah. But once Gopal Raj was a little late for the preparation, and so he called out, "Gopal Raj, what's happening with it?" He said, "It's just coming now, Gurudev, it's just coming now." It wasn't it wasn't ready. It wasn't just coming. And Goswami knew it wasn't. And he turned to Damodar Swami, who was also sitting with us, and he said, rasa is higher than tattva. So rasa means like the feeling, and tattva means like the truth. And it is a spiritual principle. Rasa is higher than tattva. But he was saying like Gopal Raj's mood of wanting to make Goswami feel happy with the idea that he's coming soon was higher than the fact, higher than the truth that it wasn't. So, yeah, a lot happened at those meals. And wherever he was, it was a major, I would say a major part of his preaching. In Vrindavan and Mayapur in Dallas. Yeah.
Cambridge also.
Yes, I should have said, yeah. And, but he always said, because I would come to Dallas and we'd eat at different devotees' homes, and the prasad was always fantastic. But once we accepted an invitation, and actually, from a certain perspective, it wasn't that good. So I asked Goswami Maharaj, like, what happened? I mean, this is very unusual. And he said, it's my fault because I didn't spend enough time with the cook. Or maybe he didn't spend any time with the cook in advance. He said, you have to spend time with the cooks, then they'll come out with the desired result. Yeah. He came here, he spent time here. And sort of hard to describe. But he, at that time we didn't have this unit here where there's the garage and there's quarters above it. So he was staying in there's a room right behind this. But yeah, just walking in that room, sort of feel Prabhupada's presence. It was like a very different, special feeling. But yeah, he did preaching at the table here. There was a... it was very interesting because he went back to the university and took up religious studies. And so every year there was a conference, a convention, called the American Academy of Religion, AAR. So at this conference, there was a lady professor from the University of California here, UCSB. What, isn't she coming in? I thought she wanted to see me.
Is she stopping?
She, we're already going to be like 10 minutes late.
Can she stop 30 seconds?
Okay.
All right, well,
she's feeling like...
Yes, okay, you should go.
Thank you.
She's not even here yet. She wants us to have our car running so she could just park.
Oh my gosh.
Please excuse me.
It was an accident, so there was traffic.
Oh.
Thank you so much, guys. I'm so happy and pleased to meet you all. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So, where were we? I think we were just, it was sort of like a stream of consciousness. Mm-hmm. I was saying how when he stayed here, you sort of feel Prabhupada's presence in the room.
You started describing about Professor Bulbridge.
Yeah, I know. AAR. So when, so at the AAR, he would see her and hear her speak, and he was very impressed. And she would hear him, and she was very impressed. And finally they met, and they, you know, sort of explained how they were appreciating each other. It came out. And then it also turned out that from the AAR he was coming here. And so he arranged for her to meet him here. So the main talk was actually at lunch. And but he I had never met a professor like her. I mean, when I was in the university, our professors weren't like her. She's like a devotee. And he said that in our generation, the people who were spiritually inclined, they either joined religious movements or they became professors in religious studies. So, yeah, it was nice. So anything else? Well, you're also on a schedule, right? You have to go to San Jose.
No.
You have to take prasad. But if you have questions, I'm more than happy to answer, yes.
You had so many beautiful deities. Could you tell us a few stories about, like any special stories about some of them?
Yeah. Well, we'll start with Gaur Nitai, because they're related to Tamal Krishna Goswami. When he was in Cambridge, he wanted Gaur Nitai deities, and he commissioned a disciple of his named Kirtida Devi Dasi. She was originally from South Africa, but she is a very devotional person. And he gave her like real specific directions that they should be like a little, not exactly chubby, but a little plump, I guess, and even like they should have. But it's in the Shastra about the necks having three lines like a conch shell. So she, on his behalf, got these deities made. And they were in Vrindavan. And in the meantime, Tamal Krishna Goswami got some other Gaur Nitai deities that he was worshipping in Cambridge. So these were never actually worshipped by him, but they were kept in Vrindavan in the care of one of his disciples from China named Padma. She's based in Dallas now. And so a devotee from our ashram here named Kunti, she's not here now, she's in South Africa. So she was actually in Vrindavan with the same professor, Barbara Holdridge. In fact, Tamal Krishna Goswami had told Barbara Holdridge, you know, if you want a good assistant, you should get Kunti. If you can get Kunti, she'll be the best. So for a while, Kunti was assisting her. And so Barbara Holdridge was writing about Vrindavan, and you know, doing a whole project about Vrindavan, so Kunti was with her there. And Padma had these deities, so Padma asked her, you know, these deities need a home. They need to be worshipped. You know, would you like to take them? So she said she has to ask my permission, and she, you know, like took some photos and emailed or whatever, and I said, yeah, and we can take them. So those were actually commissioned by Kamal Krishna Goswami. Then I won't maybe describe all of them, but then there's the Radha Krishna deities, and they were very they actually came from an antique shop right here in Carpinteria. It was like a miracle. So there is a devotee, a disciple named Anuradha, and she at that time used to teach like Waldorf system, Rudolf Steiner's system of education. And so there was a friend of hers, also connected with the Waldorf system. There, I guess there was going to be some conference of Waldorf teachers in Santa Barbara. So that friend was staying in a bed and breakfast in Carpinteria. So the friend had a 14-year-old daughter, and that 14-year-old daughter went into the antique shop, and she saw the Krishna. The mother didn't say anything, but when Anuradha visited the mother, the daughter mentioned about this. So Anuradha went with the daughter across the street, saw the Krishna. And then in another part of the store was the Radha, but not together. So she placed the Radha next to the Krishna, and we saw they were a pair. So then they informed me, and I came down. But there's a devotee here named Mayapur Das, who used to be Sridhar Swami's personal servant for a long time. And so Mayapur Das and I went, and we got these deities. And Indradumya Swami was here at the time, and he knows a lot about deities, and he also did some looking on the internet. He discovered that these are very ancient, very valuable. I mean, the owner of the shop had no idea, you know. I mean, we got them for almost nothing. It turned out that even materially they were very valuable. But they were very dark. They were had to do a lot of polishing. I don't know. Later we asked the owner, where did you get them? And he said he got them from an estate sale. An estate sale is like when someone dies, so their estate just so whatever's left. So there's those. So different deities were coming. And then I had a disciple in Dallas, originally from Bombay, in Kunja Bihari. And he kept hearing about all these deities. He thought, I have all these different deities, but I don't have Krishna Balaram. So it just so happened that a devotee from Dallas had brought back these Krishna Balaram deities for for another devotee in Dallas. But the other devotee somehow no longer wanted them. So Kunja Bihari thought, oh, well, I'll get them for Guru Maharaj. So he... I mean, the way he explains it, he had just the amount of money that the person who brought them was asking in his pocket. And so he got those. And then these, Govardhan Shivas, Gandharvika Giridhari. I was, quite attached to Govardhan Hill. And, but I had a feeling, I don't know how I knew, that I wasn't going to be able to come back to India for a while. And that I should get Govardhan Shila before I leave India. So again, His Holiness Indraduma Swami was... we have this ashram at Govardhan called the Bhaktivedanta Ashram that Tamal Krishna Goswami and I got together. And so then we have a godbrother named Keshava Bharati Das Goswami. And so we sort of put him in charge of that ashram. And... So somehow he knew that I was looking for Govardhan Shilas. Oh, and Indraduma Swami was staying at that ashram. It was meant for like senior men to come and stay and do sadhana. So he went around Govardhan Hill, Indraduma Swami, chose a few Shilas for me. So when I came to the palace, to the ashram, he showed them to me. And I liked them. I said, well, I just want to see something. So in the front yard of the palace, it used to be King's Palace at Govardhan Hill. There's like a shrine with all sorts of Shilas that just... And I saw that one on the left. It just seemed like a perfect shape, square and everything. So I brought that upstairs to Indraduma Swami's room, and then he put the Radharani next to it. And he said, who does that look like? And it was just obvious. It just looked like Radha and Krishna. So, and then he had a Shila, which you see to the right of Lord Shiva, whom we worship as Gopeshwar Mahadev. Because there's a, as you might know, His Holiness Indraduma Swami is very adventurous. So just like there's a river called the Gandaki River where you get Shalagram Shilas. So there's another river, part of it, the Narmada River, where you get these Shilas, which are Lord Shiva. And he had that. So what, at the same time that he gave me, or I got the Gandharvika Giridhari Govardhan Shilas, he gave me that Gopeshwar Mahadev Shila. And then this conch shell. So it used to be the system or tradition that every year after Gaur Purnima, Indraduma Swami would come here and spend a few days, however many there were. And then the Saturday after Gaur Purnima, the actual Gaur Purnima would be the regional Gaur Purnima festival at the Laguna Beach Temple, Panchatattva Temple. And Indraduma Swami and I would go down and celebrate that. So Gaur Purnima is not that long after Narottam Das Thakur's appearance day. And, I mean, now I have this framed picture. Then I just had a songbook with Narottam Das Thakur's picture on it. So I set that up. And Anandadumba Swami saw it and he said, oh, you know, we discovered this temple in Vrindavan of Vraja Mohan. It's out of the way. Devotees don't know about it. Hardly anyone goes there. It's very poor. And, you know, he discovered it. And the deities out of Vraja Mohan were one of six pairs of deities that were worshipped at the first Gaur Purnima festival in Kateri, Janava Mata and Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivasacharya. So Narottam Das Thakur had a disciple in Vrindavan who was feeling separation. So he sent Radha Vraja Mohan. And so Anandadumba Swami found that temple and he started going with his disciples. They would do kirtan and contribute. The temple was, as I said, really poor, but it was getting a little from the devotees. So he came and he saw the picture of Narottam Das Thakur and told me the whole story. And he said, they're really poor, and, you know, if you can do anything to help them, you know, they don't even have money to make new outfits for the deities. So he gave a pretty good amount. And meanwhile, the pujari there had given Anandadumba Swami that conch shell. And that conch shell was part of the deity's paraphernalia that Narottam Das Thakur sent from Kateri. And he said, you know, we know for sure it was part of the deity's paraphernalia. It could have been blown by Narottam Das Thakur or Srinivasacharya or Janava Mata. So this all took place that we didn't have Krishna Balaram, so we just had the Narottam Das Thakur songbook with the picture right there. Just standing in front of that. So I said, okay, you know, I'll give an amount. I'll give an amount for the temple. So, okay, and I'll give you this conch shell. And so that's how, sort of a deity in a way, or well, it's part of the deity's paraphernalia. So that's that story. And I guess for the other deities, you'll have to come another time. Yeah, I think. Anything else, or?
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
These are all kids. Some of them are graduated from high school. Some of them are going to graduate in next year, couple of years. So, would you please explain or help me to help these kids to understand the significance of reading the scriptures? You know, most of the kids, they're very much into kirtans, bhajans, they play all the instruments. But how do, as a parent, or as kids themselves, how do we develop that interest in reading the scriptures, and how can we help as a parent and for themselves, how can they develop the interest for themselves in reading Srila Prabhupada's books?
Well, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said that just as the worship of Krishna is proper and complete with Radharani, similarly, Hari Kirtan is performed properly when it's accompanied by Hari Katha. So the two make a combination, and you really need both. So What do you read other, like, ISKCON books? Maybe not Prabhupada's books. Do you, what devotional books do you read, or do you? Does anyone of you read any devotional book?
Yes,
you too, Parikshit? Or you're just nodding your head because everyone else was.
I read with my brother.
Oh, that's nice.
We try to read Bhagavatam every day.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Starting at the beginning and going through, or
we but he was listening to a class by Amarin Prabhu, and he heard a verse in Canto 6. It was in Dhritarashtra's prayers, and he really wanted to learn it. So I taught him the verse, and he wanted to go on, so we finished that chapter.
Okay.
And he wanted the certificate of prayers, so we finished that. Now he wants to see what happened after that, so...
In the sixth canto.
Yeah.
Okay, nice.
I would like to go back and start from the beginning.
Okay, that's good. And anyone else? You two are the only two.
I read.
What do you read?
I've been reading autobiographies, and then also I like to also sometimes I read I recently have been reading how when good fortune arises about Srila Gaura Maharaj.
Oh yeah.
And then I've really been getting Maharaj's lectures. I really like, I can't just do the audio, you have to look at the subtitles. And
yeah,
I've been also reading Vaishnava song books, and on the way here, me and Lalitha Mazi, we've been practicing all our songs, and it's been very nice. So that's the way I...
Okay.
I read.
So which memoirs?
Hmm?
You're saying autobiographies?
I've been reading Many Moons, and then I read Journey Home. I'm just getting into Journey Within, and then Chasing Rhinos by Shamsundar Prabhu. I started reading Bhagavatam for half an hour, and then Bhagavad Gita for half an hour.
Wow. That's good. Okay. Anyone else read?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yes?
I read a few books here and there. So if I have time, I read. I read Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna book, and then The Science of Self-Realization.
Good. So how often do you read, would you say?
So, usually, per each day, I try to read a chapter or get a verse done, and then, like, memorize it, try to understand it.
Good. Good.
I've been reading Indrajeeva Swami's books. Yeah, Channel Feature, and then I finished those, and I'm reading Journey Within, because I just finished reading Journey Home. After that, I'm going to read The Spiritual Warrior.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So I've been trying to read Srimad Bhagavatam, and recently I started reading the Brahmad Bhagavatam book also.
Oh.
So I try to read at least 2-3 verses. Yes, Maharaj, I have one question in Bharat Bhagavatamrita. So, in the beginning, when Uttara comes to Parikshit Maharaj and asks Parikshit Maharaj to tell her all the teachings he received within the 7 days, and he had received Srimad Bhagavatam. So, my question is, how come Parikshit Maharaj starts off with telling who is the greatest devotee who receives the most Krishna's mercy, rather than telling, like, what the Srimad Bhagavatam and about Srimad Bhagavatam?
Well, it's the same. It's all coming from Srimad Bhagavatam. But there was no need to repeat exactly what Sukadeva Goswami said. But he sort of extracted, say, the essence, but he, yeah, say he extracted the essence and presented it like in a very systematic way so a devotee could understand like the different gradations of devotees, or, you know, who had received the most mercy of Krishna. And then in part two, you know, gradations of the different lokas. So, but, you know, basically the Bhagavatam culminates in the 10th canto. And Brihad Bhagavatamrita also, it culminates in Krishna Leela, Krishna and Vrindavan. So, yeah. Yeah, it's the same, but it's presented in a different way. Yeah.
So I have one more question.
Sure.
So while reading Srimad Bhagavatam many times,
well, we can continue because this will, doing the offering, it will take some time.
So while reading Srimad Bhagavatam many times, I'm having lots of difficulty understanding comprehensively what a verse is trying to say. And Prabhupada's purports really help, but I'm not at the level yet to understand everything that Prabhupada is trying to tell. So, like, what would you say is the best method to continue reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and the best way to try to understand when something is very, like, difficult to understand?
Where in the Bhagavatam are you?
Second canto. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a very good book I can recommend by Bhurijan Das called Unveiling the Lotus Feet. Have you heard of it?
No.
I think it's right in that cover there, right in the left. This is it. Unveiling His Lotus Feet. And it's a detailed overview of the first four cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. So I highly recommend it. And it's, and he's gotten a lot just by reading and rereading and rereading. You do that and you get more and more and more. And on top of that, he has referred to other commentaries, like by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And so he has included in some places what they say in their commentaries to help us understand what the verse and Prabhupada's purport are saying. So I think that should help. And then the other is just to discuss with devotees.